Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome in. Time for KER Politics. Great show this week. We're going to start out in the first segment opining on President Biden's State of the Union speech. I was not very impressed personally, but we'll get into that later. I think he's a detriment to the country, by the way. Any comments, Jimmy?
Yeah, I think it was terrible. I think he lost control of it. And clearly the ratings were very far down.
Yeah.
And the polling, both before and after, does not show very positive support for anything he did.
Well, I guess, you know, rather than just throw sticks and stones, which I don't mind doing in this case because I'm pretty conservative, but having said that, I really don't understand, number one, how he got to be president, and number two, I mean, if one of your listeners say, well, by a free election, I don't believe that was a free election, but that's just my opinion. I don't think he got elected. I think the Democratic Party put him in there, and I'm not sure how they would do that. You got any idea about that, Jimmy?
Well, I mean, it looked to me like mail-in ballots, COVID, and fear, anger over Donald Trump, in spite of his policy successes, and painting him as a bad person, a combination of those factors. But most importantly, it turns out that the tech companies like Twitter, Google, were working in conjunction with the Department of Justice and the FBI and other federal agencies in order to silence information that may, in fact, have kept Joe Biden from office.
I want you to do me a favor. Explain how they could do that.
So we know there was information that was silenced and suppressed by Twitter on the Hunter Biden laptop story after a very thorough and very effective New York Post expose on the laptop.
Right.
And that was just prior to the November election. Many polls have shown that if, in fact, people knew about the laptop, knew about the relationship that Hunter Biden had with his father, Joe, with the corrupt activities that were related and identified in that laptop, had they known about that, they would not have supported Joe Biden's presidency.
I agree. And so, go ahead.
Yeah, so the tech companies were working in conjunction. There's been a hearing this week in the House of Representatives and the House Oversight Committee with talking to the key censors in the Twitter corporation and how they worked with the FBI to censor that information. So that's
right.
One area.
Yeah.
But we also know that many of the mainstream news outlets and other social media organizations and big tech companies were shadow banning, silencing, or crushing any opposition or any significant opposition to Joe Biden, as well as keeping information that might have changed people's opinions on COVID and, of course, campaign information away from the public. And in fact, they censored some members of Congress and shut down their accounts. And we know after the January 6th event, Twitter actually booted the President of the United States off their platform. So these are some areas, and we do know from research that the influence of social media, Facebook, of course, Google search technology, that can shape a very sizable percentage of the population. And some estimates up to 15 to 20% of the population.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's, you know, let's just talk about the speech itself, and let's talk about the man who now represents the United States. I feel very sorry for President Biden, if you want to know the truth. And the reason I feel very sorry is because I don't think he was put in that position by a free and honest election. I really don't. I don't think he's capable of holding that office. And the reason I say that, I'm not maligning the guy. You know, I just think, what is he? He's, what, 81 now?
Yeah, I think he's over 80 years old.
Yeah, that's too old. I know.
Mental capacity is clearly diminished.
Yeah.
His ability, he's getting confused on stage. He's making verbal gaffes continually on a daily basis. They have to protect him. They have to let him sleep extra hours before he prepares for a speech like he did last night. And then he gets lost as he goes along. Now, he did a decent job. Everyone, you know, last night, or I'm sorry, on Tuesday night for the State of the Union address, he actually stayed awake for the entire time, but he did get lost when he was making commentary and, of course, lost control of the Republican caucus
yeah.
as they were questioning some of the significant policy issues that he was presenting that were basically invalid and false narratives.
Yeah. Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, his major error was stating that the Republicans want to eliminate Social Security, and the Republicans want to eliminate any medical, you know, issues. And he said, "I never said that," and he's on record of saying that.
Yeah, he said it. He said it, and that's why the entire Republican caucus started booing him.
Yeah,
that's when Marjorie Taylor Greene stood up and said, "You liar."
Yeah.
Not the most, appropriate response,
no,
but clearly an honest response and emotionally, brought forward by his actions.
Mm-hmm.
He did that. He lost control at that moment. He responded back. He was arguing with the crowd. That was a very major, major mistake.
Yeah, I agree. It didn't show a lot of what I would call serious leadership.
No, it showed incredible weakness.
Yeah.
The other very significant comment he made is that he was deriding oil and gas companies for not investing in refinery capability and drilling capacity because, they're making money. But he says, you need to, we're going to be on oil and gas for at least another 10 years. And the Republicans started laughing. I mean, yeah. A lot of the room started laughing because, 10 years is that's – for a multi-billion-dollar investment for a new refinery is still unacceptable because you'd build it. It would take you 10 years to build it, and then you'd shut it down.
Yeah.
So that was a ridiculous statement. And then he actually responded as the crowd was heckling and laughing at him and said, well, maybe longer, which is an incredible embarrassment. And of course, that offended the left because many people on the left think that we have to be, carbon neutral by 2030 or the end of the world will be nigh. And I think that was pathetic. It was a very embarrassing moment.
Yeah.
It did show a tremendous amount of weakness.
Jimmy, have you gotten any news out of how some of the world leaders, what they said about the speech? I haven't seen anything, candidly. Have you?
No, I haven't seen any actually reporting on that, but I can tell you there's no surprises out there in the world of how ridiculous Joe Biden looks.
Yeah.
He has gone on every overseas trip. He's made incredibly ridiculous gaffes, bad statements. He's undermined national security. And, of course, other people probably only are respecting him out of respect for the nation and the power that is still exists, yet is diminishing rapidly with this type of leadership.
You know, Jimmy, the only comment I can make is I'll have to go back to one comment I made earlier in this particular segment. I really feel sorry for the guy. You know, I don't know, was he a really great politician when he represented Delaware? I don't know. I mean, I know he was in one office or another for 50 years, and the fact of the matter is, I'm not really sure what he accomplished other than he did garner the reputation of being a true gentleman. I remember Peggy Noonan, who's a great, I think she was a great editorialist, and she said, the only politician that I have any use for in America, interestingly enough, is Joe Biden. You guys, we got to cut this. That was on the record. You guys, we got to cut this. We've got to take a commercial break. Jim and I are going to be right back with you all.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time for a quick segment here. We're going to continue talking about Joe Biden for one reason. My impression of Joe Biden in the past when he was, you know, serving in one of 50-some-odd offices that he held, my impression of him was he was a nice guy. As I mentioned in the last segment, Peggy Noonan said he was probably the only real gentleman who she really could point a finger to when she was in D.C. Jim and I were talking about that during the commercial, and Jimmy violently disagrees with me. Jim, you got the mic, bud.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of evidence and a lot of information that Joe Biden was the consummate politician and appeared on the surface to be a nice guy. But down deep, there are some very serious issues that have come to light. And I just want to remind people, you know, he ran for president in 1988. He was forced out of the running because he had plagiarized speeches and because he had false statements.
Yeah, I remember that. He plagiarized a speech that was actually given by one of the politicians in the UK.
Correct. And then he also made statements about how he was the top of his class in law school, that he had done a number of different things. Back then, journalism in general media actually investigated those claims, and it turned out that he was lying, openly lying.
I do remember that, Jimmy.
It forced him out of the race. Yeah. Now, that's one. And he's actually continued throughout his career to make these false allegations and statements.
Okay.
He was a moderate Democrat for a more, I would say, a conservative Democrat in the 80s and then in the 90s at some point. But then he shifted. But here's the real problem that I see. You have the Me Too generation and attacking, you know, many, many people for, you know, violations against, you know, women's rights.
Right.
And there is a very credible accusation from a young staffer back in the 80s called Tara Reid, I believe in the 90s, who claimed that Joe Biden assaulted her in the hallway and then left the office, went home. Her mom told her mother about it, and her mom actually called into the Larry King live show, and there is tape recording of the accusation of a very powerful politician that turns out to be Joe Biden, as Tara Reid explains later. And then she is just absolutely lambasted by the media and lambasted by the Democratic Party for making this accusation. And it's a very credible accusation. And it's not the only one that's out there. So Joe Biden, there's many, many questions, not to mention what he has done with his son Hunter, with his brother Joe, Jim, in relations with foreign entities and basically selling power and influence as vice president, as a senator, and of course, now as the president.
Right. Well, I have to tell you this. I'm not really comfortable with him because of what you're saying right now. I want to talk about one more thing because I think it's still relevant, and that's called the laptop from hell.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be an incredible problem as the House Oversight Committee continues to investigate and open this up to the public.
Yeah.
The problem will be, and this is the sad reality, the mainstream media, the Washington Post, the New York Times, all the network television stations, CNN, MSNBC, they're not going to report on it. They're not going to investigate it. They have made a decision that they're not going to allow information out, that they are going to support the DNC and Joe Biden. And people like Peggy Noonan have bought into that, quote, quasi-conservatives because of their globalist ideologies and their fear that Donald Trump or some form of MAGA first or America first individuals will actually take away the power that they've created and the influence they have over the Washington corruption scheme.
Yeah.
So the sad reality is the Hunter Biden laptop story will get more. There will be more facts put out. It'll be very damning to the Department of Justice. But again, Who holds the Department of Justice accountable? Only the president and the voters. And if in fact they don't get the information, if the tech companies continue to censor and silence, if the media companies don't report, it's very difficult to get the word out on what corruption's going on there and how much damage that's creating to the country, and really bringing into fold an illegitimate administration that is taking this country down the tubes.
Well, Jimmy, let me ask you a question. Realistically speaking, when you look at a guy like Joe Biden, everybody knows he's, you know, he's the president of the United States. He appears to be mentally incompetent to hold that particular office. Do you think any of the world's leaders really care about him coming on to a young staffer or whatever? Or do you think they will just wait until he, you know, is no longer the president and then back to business as usual?
They could care less about the staff. They don't care about that. In fact, right. You know, half the European leaders have done something similar or worse. You know, my guess, I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't make an accusation like that unless I know. But we do know some of the issues with the French leadership. We know the issues with Boris Johnson. There have been a lot of problems around there. Of course, the Finnish prime minister being naked on TikTok or something like that. These are kind of ridiculous things. What matters is policy. What matters is trust and faith that the U.S. government will follow through on its promises and be consistent. And what we're seeing is a complete failure. When the Biden administration ran from Afghanistan, they left all their NATO partners and security partners in Afghanistan, all their volunteers, all the civilians, not just the military, but all the civilians that have been working for 20 years to stabilize that country, they walked away and left them. So they do not trust the United States. There's justifiable reason not to do that. And of course, that brought upon the Ukraine war when the Russians took advantage of weakness and the separation from NATO. And in my view, that's my opinion. And that's created much, much, much danger for this world right now. And I think it's directly related to weak leadership in the White House.
Well, of course it is. The only point I wanted to bring up is this is going to be a blip in the history of the United States. I mean, it may be a little more than a blip, but I think it's just going to be a blip. I mean, this too shall pass.
My fear, Al, is they've done so much damage, and that we are facing incredibly powerful. You know, China is an incredibly powerful and growing economically, militarily, politically influential nation.
Yeah.
And by allowing them to take ground with an authoritarian communist leadership through use of, you know, financial incentives from a quasi form of authoritarian capitalism, the United States could be pushed out of the top leadership point. And then what happens then? China will dictate the future terms of the world. That could happen in a 4-year period with Joe Biden in charge.
Well, I hope it doesn't, is all I can say. We've got a very important election coming up, but we also have the news coming up on all the stations that carry our show. Stick around after the 12 o'clock news. Jimmy and I will be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to talk a little bit, and now that the news is done, we're going to talk a little bit about the pipeline, where, simplistically speaking, Germany was supplying, or Russia was supplying energy through that pipeline to Germany, and the pipeline blew up. Nobody really knows for sure who damaged the pipeline. I know most of you guys on the blog think that it was the United States, but Jimmy and I are not so sure about that. Jim, what do you think?
Well, okay, so where this stems, the information, of course, there was information at the time of the explosion that indicated there were U.S. aircraft in the area. The U.S. had been conducting an exercise in the Baltic with Norway and other NATO partners, both U.S. Marines, naval elements, and other elements were operating there just a few weeks before. And what is really triggering this rather massive accusation is a detailed Substack article by a writer, Seymour Hersh. And now Seymour Hersh, he's been with The Atlantic, with New York Times. He's somewhat, you know, recognized liberal left journalist.
Yeah.
And in this article, he gives it very extensive detail from unnamed sources that United States naval deep dive operatives conducted an operation under the cover of Baltops with the Baltic exercise
in the
few weeks before this happened, placed explosives, and those explosives were remotely detonated a few weeks later, about 3 weeks later, that there was a planning group that had put together this operation under the White House. And then in his statement that Biden was pushing for this and in fact approved it.
Right.
But it was a very, very secretive mission. And in his article is rather detailed. But I think there are some gaps. Certainly the White House and the Biden administration has come out and said this is all fantasy and farce.
Right.
Don't actually, at this point, it's very hard to judge. But I think we ought to take a look at what is potentially true, what's potentially false, and then some questions that need to be asked.
Jimmy, got a question for you. Where did this guy get his information?
So he says that he got it from an unnamed very specific source.
Well, I got to say one thing about that. You know, we've been doing this for a long time. I've been doing it since 1995. And I have to tell you, if somebody doesn't have a source for something, and nobody knows this better than Out of the Box Jerry, and I appreciate you, Jerry, working with me on this, but if a source is not available, I don't even pay any attention to it anymore.
Well, the problem for this article is everybody's paying attention to
why?
It.
Why? But why?
Because it's fits perfectly into political narratives that are out there right now. There's a couple of different narratives that could be taken from this.
All right.
One is the actual article itself paints Biden as very decisive. And of course, we know from his own statements, Biden's statements, that he wanted to end Nord Stream 1 and they would find a way. And that was just a few months before the explosion.
All right.
We know from Victoria Nuland's testimony in Congress that Nord Stream 2, we would shut it down, that it would be ended. So those are public government U.S. statements that make a very strong case the United States had interest in this in order at NATO and other nations in order to separate the Western NATO allies from dependency on Russian energy. Now, the accusation has been by the United States, by some people, that in fact Russia did this in order to blame NATO and the United States.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of justification for that argument because in fact it was a massive revenue source for the Russians and it has cost them because immediately countries like Norway and other North Sea gas producers and the United States began shipping gas to Germany and to Western Europe to actually take away the dependency of Russia.
Right.
So that's one factor to look at. Another factor is, all right, the Russians are using this as propaganda to blame the United States, and of course that separates many people. There's many people that distrust, certainly powerful political entities in Europe that distrust the United States, especially after what happened with the U.S. withdrawal in Afghanistan, leaving NATO allies and partners just hanging in the last weeks of that entire debacle. So that continues to put a divide with some politicians in Europe, and of course gives some legitimacy for Russian actions if in fact the United States had done this.
Yeah.
Now with Seymour Hersh in particular, he makes this argument that in fact Biden was decisive. That's a political plus for Biden. So he may or may not have anything to do with this thing. But it makes him look like, well, I made a decision that was beneficial to the people that are very much against Russia in the Ukrainian war. That's another angle that you've got to look at. But let's look at the specifics of what happened. In his article, he says that they separated this from special operations. They separated it from Navy SEALs. They separated and used Navy deep divers.
Yeah.
And that was able to take it from a covert operation to a clandestine operation. Those are two distinct things. Covert, never identified, clandestine, maybe with military and just unattributable or not tracked.
Yeah.
And that takes away congressional oversight. That's his basic argument, that it hadn't required congressional approval.
Explain that one more time, Jimmy, if you would. Why would that take over, why would that take the United States Congress out of the picture? How did they,
A covert operation has to be approved.
Yeah.
So that's an operation that has to go before congressional Gang of Eight type of people, the House Intelligence Oversight and the Senate Intelligence Oversight Chair and a few key people. So they are aware in notification process the United States is going to take an action that does not want to be attributed to the United States at all.
Yeah.
A clandestine operation is a little bit different, where in fact it's something you don't want to be found out, but it doesn't require congressional oversight because it's in conjunction with a military operation or some other national security operation which does not require congressional oversight because it's in conjunction with a broader set of authorities.
Yeah.
So the argument here is they moved it from a covert operation that did not need oversight to, in fact, a clandestine mission that would allow naval non-special officers, non-special mission people to do it.
Yeah.
But here's the problem with that argument. There would be no need to send Navy deep divers down to put these plant these explosives. There is vast capabilities with remotely operated undersea vehicles, ROVs, to be able to go ahead and plant explosives like this. There's many capabilities with some type of weapon systems that can go down and would be able to do this and be very hard to trace, if very unattributable. So the basic foundations of his argument, I think, are somewhat questionable, and how that command structure and how that would work and how many people would be involved in it would require a very serious level of chain of command authorities that would be outside of the clandestine and covert special mission operation types of activities. I know this because I worked in that field for many years.
Sure.
So I'm questioning the foundations of the basic arguments here, though ultimately this has become a political back and forth, and it is problematic.
But again, what I find interesting about this is it's been quite a while since that event occurred. And it was a major event given the fact that Germany was kind of left without a source of power, a guaranteed source of power. Again, the author of this article, it's a very long article, by the way. I may post it on the website just for giggles, for lack of better terms. But it seems to me that without a definite source, this thing is somewhat unbelievable, in my opinion. And the reason I say that is because there are a million stories out there. You guys are going to cut it here. That's my opinion. And Jimmy and I are going to be right back. Pipeline, the various theories on what happened there. Anyway, we're here to wrap up the show. We're going to talk about what I think is a real blockbuster piece of information, and that Anthony Fauci is now on record as of a couple of days ago. He's on record as saying none of the vaccinations work. Jimmy, you know a lot more about this than most people. Why don't you elaborate?
Well, I do want to finish up with the last on the Nord Stream pipeline issue. I just make one more comment that we have seen a lot of reporting that has come out over the last few years with unnamed sources, one source that turned out to be false, but was very politically motivated and oriented. And some of those people actually paid, like the Steele dossier, by the FBI or paid by political operatives.
Right.
So always take these things with a grain of salt. So the Nord Stream pipeline article by Seymour Hersh, until other facts come out, I'm going to say it's questionable. So I think we agree on that, don't you?
We totally agree on that, yeah.
Yeah, so the The next piece of this is, and the last segment, I think, is a really, really important segment. So way back in September of 2020, I wrote an article that was actually incredibly well received and one of the most shared opinion pieces at the time in the Epoch Times. And basically, the papers, you know, ultimately said, hey, look, this is a virus. It's going to mutate. We've got to get over it. And of course, you know, we had lockdowns, we had the vaccine effort that went out, and this massive push by the Biden administration to mandate vaccines, force people to take them. Federal employees lost their jobs. Military people were kicked out. Basically shut down the economy, kept it under, you know, water for really for years. We still haven't come back to the pre-COVID employment levels. And of course, the economy's had a very difficult time with inflation. So all these factors really, really make you wonder when you listen to Anthony Fauci and senior administration officials say that these vaccines, and this is after the Biden administration took power, said these vaccines are going to, first, they're going to stop transmission. Second, they're going to bring herd immunity. Third, that they're going to be safe and effective. And four, we're only going to need to take, you know, one, and then, oh, it was, then we're going to take two, and then it's boosters, and now they're talking about boosters every year. Now, what is absolutely beyond disturbing to me is Anthony Fauci has published a paper, has put out a paper with a couple other NIAID, National Institute for Agency for Infectious Disease, his, where he was previously the chair or the director. They've put out a paper saying basically that the vaccines are ineffective. They do not stop transmission, that the virus continues to evolve, and that the solution is to create more vaccines, better and vaccines and vaccine strategies. To me, this is unacceptable, unbelievable manipulation, one of the most damaging events in human history across the world, driven primarily by the CDC, by Anthony Fauci, and connections to the Wuhan lab doing research on gain of function for these types of viruses that was really pushing the limits of legality, if it was legal at all. And then to come out and say, hey, all the stuff I've been telling you for the last 2 years is wrong. And, oh, by the way, there are serious side effects with some of these diseases, as we're seeing continuously with heart disease, with liver disease, with cancers and other major problems. This is really, really disturbing. Most Americans, most people in the world better wake up to what's been going on here. And it looks to me like, again, influence of pharmaceutical companies, of political objectives, and of people that are thinking that they are much brighter than others and unwilling to accept information that may counter their narrative. And we've seen this over and over again in the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's been going on ever since COVID became a reality. This thing has been going on. I find it really interesting that with everything that I read, from other doctors during this period, Jimmy stated that Fauci was doing the wrong thing. This is from physicians. Okay, there are books out there, there's a movie out there, etc., etc. And I am amazed. It shows you how inefficient government can be, because there is nothing more inefficient than that proclamation, for lack of better terms, by Fauci and then the President of the United States. It makes no sense whatsoever, and I think that is a huge, huge red flag on the effectiveness of the current operation, and also a huge red flag on the reputation of Anthony Fauci.
Not just Anthony Fauci, but the United States government in general, and certainly the CDC. Now, here's the worst thing about this. Apparently, there are studies that were used from before the vaccines were mandated, given to the CDC, that actually declared that, hey, this is there's a good chance this will not work against this mucosal, you know, basically mucus-based, nose-based virus.
Yeah.
And that it would spread, continue. Though this is information they had, and then they continued to push the lies. That is really damaging. The other thing is, they're not quitting, right? The CDC, they have just announced that they are putting recommendations for children 6 months to 4 years to get two doses of the vaccine and a booster before they start school. We know that children are not affected by the disease. We know there are potential, like life-threatening, potentially fatal heart problems for some young people, for a small percentage, but for some young people. So why are you taking a risk in mandating or recommending this? Now, it's not a mandate because the school districts do not have to do it, but clearly in blue, heavy blue state areas that have continued to push these false narratives about COVID, they're going to use these requirements and force children to do, you know, to take these vaccines that are potentially damaging, and we have no long-term historical studies of what the damage will be.
Well, we do have what I would call unofficial studies. Literally hundreds.
No long-term ones, because we don't even know. It's only been
no, that's true, except hundreds of people have had heart attacks and perished. Who had the I'll call them jabs.
Nancy Mace, Congressman, South Carolina,
in hearings
2 days ago, actually outlined to these people that in fact she had adverse reactions, has a heart issue, can't be identified, and has some other health issues that will never go away.
Right.
We are seeing this across the board with athletes, with all kinds of people that are being incredibly damaged from it. And again, the virus is not damage young people, an incredibly minuscule risk of death unless there's some very serious issues with that child.
Yeah.
So this makes absolutely no sense, with one exception. It makes sense if you are connected to the pharmaceutical industry, if the pharmaceutical industry is going to make a fortune off of this, and in fact they are pushing a narrative with their scientists that are embedded in the government, and unfortunately this is what we see, the most unbelievable corruption that has damaged humanity.
Yeah.
And continues at this rate. And the reason why they're continuing it, because they're afraid to be honest and say, oh my God, we made a mistake. Or to be shown for the corrupt actors that they were. And unfortunately, that's exactly what's going to happen no matter what. Because there's just too many people that are, there's too much information, too many good scientists that are saying something is wrong here. And that's going to come back and just haunt them and bite them and hopefully put some people in prison. For the damage they've caused to both the nation and individuals in their lives.
I really wonder if that's going to happen. It's very interesting. Pardon me, a very interesting point that you're making, Jim.
Well, I think there's, if you don't have accountability for this type of fraud, and of course this is directly connected to what we talked about earlier in the show and what we've been talking about often, and that's the corrupt media and the tech companies that were pushing the narrative that the government was colluding with them in order to force people into a particular narrative. And unfortunately, that's what we're facing today. This is absolutely almost an Orwellian type of control that's manipulating the future of our nation and humanity, and something has to give.
Oh, of course something has to go. It's absolutely ridiculous. Boy, just in time to wrap up the show, I got a real big frog in my throat. Jimmy, wrap it up, would you?
No, we're looking forward to, you know, people's comments on this on the blog. Go to the blog. But of course, we're looking forward to talking to you next week and giving more ideas. And thanks for being with KER Politics for such a long time.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.